Yeah, I'm
which is a
surprised
good
that
thing.
people said that about your carved Corinthian thing. Like what they got out of that was like, oh, we can do that. It's like that wasn't the
That's
point.
actually the craziest thing.
They didn't understand it. There was like, anyway, enough people commented that this could be made with AI.
They were saying like the 3D printed thing at our school where they were talking about 3D printing. Someone was restoring a building that someone had 3D printed a like top piece on. So it was like a carved owl thing and they couldn't reproduce it. So they 3D printed it and then painted over it with like layers and layers of paint. And then they found it as they were preserving this thing because it had cracked and split open. And they were like, what type of wood is this? It's like there's like a beehive inside of this thing. And then they like pulled it up and they're like, oh, it's 3D printed.
Are we starting or what are we
What are you
doing?
gonna say?
Ooh, look at this. He just starts
Anyway,
swatting it.
all right. Welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast. In today's episode, we're going to talk about modernism as a whole.
The idea is you get out of North Ministry, you start your journey, you become a journeyman.
That's the idea.
Okay, let's stay high level. Okay, you're getting into too much detail.
Okay.
What changed? Why are you back?
He just kept begging me to come back and like, dude, all right.
So going back to that cold open.
Oh, well, okay. You're supposed to like complete the thought in the cold open and then
okay.
You like
no,
go
we
into
can
the
keep going. Let's
right.
Let's do modernism.
You said, are we going to start? You should have.
I'm going to bring it around. I'm going to bring it around.
Oh, my God.
Keep going. I'm going to bring it around.
All right. This is an article from Luton's.
Lutyens.
Lutyens. Sorry. Lutyens newspaper. And it's
no,
an article.
It's Country Life magazine. And it's Sir Edwin Lutyens.
We're falling apart.
His article in Country Life magazine.
From 1931.
And he's English architect.
All right. From 1931. All right. This article says, Austin found this article.
It's
on
titled,
modernism. Oh my gosh.
What I Think About Modern Architecture.
What I Think of Modern Architecture.
So the reason this is important is because this is just right when modernism begins to take over. Okay. And so it's in like 35 or 37 that Adolf Hitler closes the Bauhaus. And so then you have Gropius and Mies van der Rohe leaving Germany, you know, a short 10 years later. So this is early modernism, right, is going on. And he's writing as a classical traditional architect who does modern things, twist to him. He's saying what I think of modern architecture. Go ahead.
And one more thing. This is a quote that I think sums up this article the best. My generation is, perhaps, I ought to say was, a humanist generation. We believe that the measure of a man's architecture was man, and that the rhythm of a building should correspond to the rhythms familiar in human life. All architecture must have rhythms that affect the eye as music does the ear, producing vibrations in the brain. The rhythms of modern architecture rarely produce what I should call a happy or genial vibration in the brain. It is either wearisome staccato like the noise of a hydraulic drill or, to my mind, a confused medley like the tuning of a brass band. Instead of making a statement gracefully and perhaps with distinction and humor, which is what I require of a building of an individual, blah, 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 blah. It keeps going. It's a really good article. But I think that talk about like how the rhythms affect your brain and how everything goes with it is why I'm not a huge fan of modern architecture. I'm always looking to him like I'm about to get hit over the head.
But you are
say,
a
like
fan, a little bit of it.
Nah, I'm not a fan at
not
all.
Not at all. I'm kind of a fan of it, like with the Apple Store, because it fits them, you know?
It does fit them.
I kind of am a fan of brutalism, too, for government, because they're kind of like brutal to us, you know, at this point. So it's like, yeah, that's very fitting for you. If you're like some,
well,
I don't know, there's things about modern architecture that I can see that have a place. You know,
and Barrett.
You're like, get out.
I mean, there's some modern architecture I like. And so I'm not going to sit here and say I don't like modern architecture. I don't think to Lutyens' point, I don't think it's pleasing to the eye or the ear or to the mind. I think it can be numbing. I think it can be Frank Gehry, rest in peace, did some things that were cutting edge and crazy, right? His crumpled paper. Yeah. I don't look at his buildings and say they're ugly, but I look at his buildings and from what I understand about them, they were hard to live in. They were hard to, people got literally physically sick from being inside some of his buildings. And so the...
You don't look at them and say they're ugly?
That's what I'm saying, dude.
I think they're sculptural, okay?
Yeah.
And so I don't necessarily look at them as architecture. I look at them as sculpture.
Art more.
Yeah. Okay. And so it's just...
It is a hard comparison.
Well, if you look at, I would think... Like the Boston City Hall, which is a famous brutalist building, is an ugly building. Okay, it is a
Boston of all places gets that.
I know, they tore down.
Oh, I know.
They tore down the oldest part of the city in order to build that.
That was torn down.
That was
because we walked by it.
Yeah, that's a steakhouse.
Okay,
I find that to be ugly, right? And I find a lot of brutalist buildings to be ugly. And so, you know, that's where, you know, I have a problem with modern architecture is it's just not pleasing. It's not.
It's like nothing. It's just like you said, it's kind of numbing.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, here's a place to live in. Here's your box.
And then it ends up being monotonous, right? Because, you know, the downtown skyscrapers that are all glass boxes and things like that. And so you're.
I hate. All sweeping statements, every one of them, including that one. But I think it's hard. I want to just say I don't like modern architecture. You know, I want to just be like, I don't like it. But I see what you're saying when you bring up Frank Gehry and you're like, oh, those are sculpture. I get that. But it's hard to compare that with another building. You know what I mean? Like they're in the same category as like they're both buildings. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes a hard comparison to have someone who's doing sculptural work on a building and then someone who's not because of that thing that the Lutyens guy said where he's talking about how there's a rhythm that goes with it and you lose that rhythm when you're in that, you know, building. Like even I was thinking about this the other day, just minor trauma flashbacks. I went to the Eiffel Tower, Leaning Tower of Pisa. And... You can walk to the top of it, or at least you could. Wait. Whenever I went there.
Oh, okay.
I'm going somewhere. And when you're climbing up it, it's these small corridors, and as you're going, it's one of the most disorienting things, and it makes you feel sick because it's like you're walking like this. You know what I mean? Because the walls are like on either side of you, so you're kind of like hugged into the space, but you feel yourself doing this. For one area, and then you're doing this to the next area, and it's just like it's like you're
disorienting.
It's weird, and it just throws you off, and it's uncomfortable. Yeah, that's oh my gosh, flashbacks right now. It's just it's an uncomfortable feeling. It's weird, and I just can't imagine that the Gehry things are anything less like that. You know, see, even if you look here,
you can see how they're tilted.
You can see how See the scuffing marks on the wall. It's been washed clean because people are leaning against it actively because it's leaning. Isn't that crazy?
Looks like a dirty streak right there.
Yeah, but it's a polished streak.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, because people have been pressed against it. And it's worn down more on that side. And
the stairs, yeah.
It's a weird, weird deal. But
good. That's a good reference for what we're talking about.
Right. Thank you. Doing this for 100 episodes and feel pretty good. And then... Never got a compliment.
You finally said something that made sense, Jackson. Good job.
Anyway, that's how I felt looking at those Gehry things. Just I got the heebie-jeebies of thinking about like walking around inside of that building. And I'm sure he's got all the stairs level and everything, but it's just there's something to that, right? There's something to that scale where you can feel it, you know?
Yeah, I just don't like chaos. I think that's why I'm drawn to architecture in general, because I like organization. And I think organization is beautiful. But when you have a building that looks like it's melting, to me, it's chaotic. And I feel like it's just like, why would it looks like it's in disarray?
I guess, yeah, I don't know where we want to go on this. The
anywhere. Sorry, I kind of derailed talking about that.
I think that
Oh, let's talk about that. Because I probably do not agree with you guys on this guy.
Falling Water?
I don't like this guy.
Frank Lloyd Wright?
Frank Lloyd Wrong. I don't like anything he's done. Like, I've seen, like, I kind of am like Jackson in the beginning. Like, is something wrong with me? You know, why don't I like that? Not saying you don't like Frank Lloyd Wright, but I kind of like,
why don't you like that?
I just,
we're looking
just
at Falling Water.
It just does not look pleasing to me. It looks so, almost like Brutalist too, with like natural elements.
This is his most famous one, right?
That Roby House would probably be another famous one.
I can say things I like about that one, but I agree with you, Richard, where I don't overall like that.
I like the waterfall. That's cool.
Yeah.
I think that I...
That's the interior? That's important. Because I like that. I think that's better done than the outside.
Well, I think whether you look at that building and say it's ugly or not, or I don't like it, okay? You have to respect...
No, I don't. I'm just kidding. Go ahead. Sorry.
You have to respect the design ideal of how he put that together, okay? And if you go back to the exterior picture...
Like how he married it with nature? Is that kind of what you're talking about? Or
that, and just the design sensibilities that are all telling the same story, okay? The horizontal lines... A horizontal plating that's reflected not only in the window panes and the window glass, but in those horizontal, you know, decks that go out to the stonework that has the same horizontal lines and horizontality going
and they're different shapes.
It's a simple building, okay? Then that you have these plates kind of sitting on top of it, on top of one another, just like you have the rocks stacked on top of each other in that tower. And so all of those things are cohesive and they are telling the same story, whether you like it or not. If you go down to that lower pool and then to the lower rocks, the architecture just kind of continues that plating and that kind of stacking and that kind of layout. Now, it may not be beautiful, but you have to respect, you don't have to respect anything. You have to appreciate, you know, the design ideal that he carried out and made and carried through. And then when you look at his career and the things that he was doing with the Prairie School Movement, and you go to the Roby House and you see how far he carried that, in that he would, the horizontal lines in the stone that goes across there, to even the way he would rake the mortar joints so that you only see horizontal mortar joints and you don't see vertical mortar joints. And he used a Roman brick, which is a long horizontal brick. And so you see this kind of same theory of architecture contributing, you know, on this building as well as that other one. Now, I find this actually to be pleasing, and I like his prairie style houses. I don't love all of his stuff. Like, I think Taliesin is ugly, and that's his, you know.
Taliesin?
That's his place in Arizona. It looks like a bad pro shop at a golf things in Arizona. And so I don't find that as pleasing or as wonderful as I think his other places were. And so I think that there tends to be a lot of
hate,
kind of, well,
he's overhyped. I think,
well, there's a lot of people that would say Frank Lloyd Wright's the greatest ever. Oh my gosh.
I do not see I
grew up in the late 70s and early 80s. I was in high school in 84. boomer. So I remember the Beatles, okay? I think they disbanded in like late 60s, okay? So I missed the Beatles, right? So I missed the whole thing. And I would always look at the Beatles going, what? I don't get it. What? Why are they such a big deal?
I want to hold you. You didn't get it? No.
And what I found out later is how cutting edge they were and how they changed things with the albums that they did musically and the things. And so I always looked at the Beatles like the Beatles are the greatest ever. The five greatest rock bands are, you know, Revolver and Rubber Soul. Thank you. And so you're just like, what? How? Only when you look back in context of what they are doing do you appreciate them more. If you look at the Roby House, okay, He's got an open floor plan, okay, which doesn't become popular until the 1950s, and that's 1908, okay? The big overhanging eaves, all the things that he was doing, America starts doing 40 years later, okay? And so that he was so far ahead of his time that it's hard to appreciate, I don't get it. Why are we fawning over this guy? And so I think he's overhyped as well, right? And so, but I now understand what he was doing and what was going on, and I go, yeah, okay, I get it, but, you know, I still don't love him, right? And so—
Okay, so you're with me then.
Well, I don't look at Falling Water and say I don't like it, because I actually do like it. I do think it's—
Can I ask a question?
I think it's very cool, and it'd be fun to hang out there. I find that to be a space I want to go. I'm attracted to, I'm drawn to.
Where is that? Sorry.
Pennsylvania.
No, it's okay. He said no.
Outside of Pittsburgh.
I guess you talk a lot of smack about, like, I guess we're even looking at these houses together, and a lot of, like, your critiques of some of these houses are like, there's no flow in the house. There's no, like, understood, like, this is where I'm supposed to be. I'm drawn inside in this thing. It's like, whatever.
For houses, for you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
When we're house hunting, he said no to some of these, and he's like, yeah, this one doesn't really have a lot of flow. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I can see that now. Because a lot of times he does a good job putting words to things where you're like, I get it, but I don't know why I don't like this. But I guess this is an example of something where I'm like, I want to go inside of this because I want to see what is happening inside of this
thing. When we were battling about who's going to go, that's what I was going to say.
Okay, yeah.
That's crazy.
Because it's like, I want to look inside because I'm like, there is no common plate line. It looks like from the outside looking in, it looks like the inside of that house is going to be absolute and utter chaos in terms of, like, there's six stories and you got to go up, you got to go down. Is there a common main room? So I guess I'm just like,
that might change my opinion, like, a little bit.
The other thing the story that I was told about this thing is that it's not only cool, okay, whether you think it's cool or not, people think it's cool. It's also an engineering marvel.
I think it's cool.
An engineering marvel. And Frank Lloyd Wright famously was an engineer, not an architect. But the outside, that lower platform that it was held out, when they poured that concrete with the steel, they had a support out underneath that on that corner. And famously, he was told, it was said when he went there, the workmen were afraid to knock the post out of the support out of there because they thought it was going to fall on them. And he apparently went out there and knocked it out because he knew it wasn't going to fall. And so there's engineering pieces of that, yeah, right. Wow. There they are. They built the, you know, the supports for that thing, and they were afraid to knock it out because they thought it would fall. So there was an engineering piece of this thing that too was cutting edge. Like, he was using concrete and reinforced steel way before other people were using it the way they were using it. So, you know, there's some bravado and some
innovation,
right? That also, again, you may not like it or not, but you have to appreciate what he was doing at his time.
I'm just kidding. Can we tour that?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Back to the question.
Next episode, then.
Like, who is the floor plan not like, oh, there's a little, like, mini upstairs here.
I don't know. I've never been there.
I will say then, since you just defended him for 10 minutes to me.
I defend someone I don't like. Go ahead.
I do appreciate the engineering part of that.
You do?
Yeah, after your explanation.
So, you know, anyway, we're talking about modernism. And here's my problem with modernism. One, and there's probably, I probably should think through this a little more clearly. I wasn't prepared for this. One is modernism makes fun of classicism, and I don't think that's justified, okay? Modern architects will look at the things that classical people have done in the past and go, oh, that's just reinventing the past. We want to move forward. And so, therefore, they don't know how to do proper classicism, and they screw it up, and it now looks ugly. If you have, like, I have tons of pictures on my computer of these. I mean, if you look at the new buildings at SMU campus, you look at the historic buildings were done beautifully. These new buildings, the classicism is terrible. It's just ugly. And
I saw those were under construction.
And so it's poorly done classicism that makes you, makes me as a classical guy frustrated and going, what is the name of those newer buildings that were on SMU campus?
Perkins.
This is bad classicism. Okay. Yeah. And so, one, they use cheap materials, the columns aren't in the right place. It's trying to be bold and strong. It just looks kind of, you know, like a fat belly on the face of the building. It's clunky. It's odd. It doesn't look good. It's not beautiful.
Pilasters usually have entices.
Sometimes. And so
that pediment is wrong too, right?
Yeah.
The split fillet.
Yeah. It's messed up. It's bad classicism. And so part of what I look at with the thing that frustrates me about moderns is moderns look at classicists and say, oh, you just get it in the right hands. Okay. Quinlan Terry, his buildings are new classicism that is freaking unbelievable as far as how he builds and puts together these buildings. And so
yeah,
they're beautifully done and they're inventive and they're interesting. And so,
cool.
Well, it's like the modernists are like, just order some columns and slap them up there.
And so that's one gripe about it. Two is that if you look at what architects studied in the 1920s, okay, they looked back to the past, okay, and would copy and study the past so they could build beautiful things today. Today, architects no longer look to the past and everything's looking forward, okay? And the criticism I have of Frank Gehry, and not really his career and what he did, but that
what he spawned.
He represents this new thinking about architecture that you have to be inventive, and if you're not inventive, you're not cutting edge, you're not doing anything important. And so what you end up with is these buildings that if you go to architecture school, you know, you're studying how grass could become our buildings in the future, or how plant life can define the structure of our buildings. That's almost a philosophical thing. That's not a practical thing. And when architects get out and don't know how to design a building and don't know how to build, and my architect friend goes, oh, I wonder what those little X's are, and there are studs in the wall. They're so disconnected from the reality of how things are built today that they're out here on the fringe. And I'm not saying they shouldn't be studying those things, but that shouldn't be their main focus, that modernism is so far out that it's not practical to every day. So us building residential houses, I can't hire 99% of any architect getting out of architecture school because they don't know what the hell they're doing. They don't know they don't know how buildings built together. They don't have understanding of any traditional details. One reason it's hard for us to get architects on our team is because most architects don't know how to do a gable end return the proper way. So my frustration with modernism is that it has now become a disconnected art, okay, that is no longer attached to reality, and they end up driving the lot of the new buildings. You look at strip malls, okay, or you look at downtowns where all the buildings are glass boxes. You're like, can we not get a little variety here? Can we not? And our society begins to look monotonous. Our society begins to look, you know, it's the geography of nowhere. And that whole idea that you pull up to a strip mall and where am I? Am I in San Diego or I am Fort Worth or I'm in New York? And because they all look the same. I remember I had an conversation with an architect one time. He goes, well, I was with a commercial architecture firm. We were doing storefronts. He goes, I couldn't handle it anymore. I go, why? He goes, we were decorating boxes. I go, what does that mean? He goes, all those, the DSW and all the different stores were boxes, and we had to put a facade on the front of them in order to give it variety and give it. And he goes, we're just decorating boxes poorly, I might say. I might add to that conversation. So modernism to me is giving up of the classical ideals of beauty and giving up the classical ideas of things being built to last 400 years, 500 years. It's just a real problem. Sorry, long rant.
That was a good clip.
I even got more now. But if you watch that guy,
let it rip.
What's that guy's that architect teacher that I really like?
Calder
Stuart Hicks. He is an architecture professor, and he does really great videos. And he does one video on caulking, And he shows an historic building from like the 1880s. And then he says, look how this tube has changed everything.
Yeah.
And basically what's happened is you look at a historic building.
I didn't realize he was a professor.
If you look at these historic buildings from the 1880s, they have these huge deep overhangs. The windows sit back 12, 18 inches from the face of the building. And now because of caulk, you can push the glass right out to the face of it. And all you have is these flat things. And he's going to show a historic picture in just a second.
And caulk will cover
the... And caulk will seal the thing up. And it used to be that you would have an historic building and you'd have to have the stone overhang the window so that the water wouldn't get in. And now you just use caulk and it takes care of everything.
No way.
Oh, he's got a picture there, right there. Just stop right there. The reason those windows are so far set back in there is a water protection, water management. And now you think of the glass boxes and all it is caulk. Okay. And so windows, I'm going to do a video on this soon about why I hate these flat windows that sit out on the face of it. But the reason why they're doing that is because of tape and glue and caulk that allow them to put it right out in the face without having a problem with leaking later on.
That's crazy.
So it's another problem with these modern tools and modern things that we all think are make things better. Okay. And they don't. Our buildings aren't lasting longer than they used to last.
The better is easier.
Faster and easier, yeah. Right?
That's the better.
Well, the thing is too, the way you design your buildings and windows, you will have them set back like what we see here. And you still use tape flashing and caulking. So you don't, like, I don't know. I feel like you could still use those guys who like all that, you know, flat, and I think you should use what's available, but it's not like you're not using that.
Well, my problem is like what I'm telling our guys now, if we install our windows, we are going to use a combination of the old way of doing it and the new. Okay. Because the problem with tape and glue and these things is they're fine now, but I don't know how long they're going to last. And if I want my buildings to last 100 years, is that tape going to be on that Huber zip board in 50 years?
Mm-hmm. Who knows, right?
Right. We don't know. And are the oils going to break down? Are they going to get brittle? Are they going to get hard? And all of a sudden, the building that's really tight right now is all of a sudden going to start leaking in, you know, 50 years, 40 years. And so what we want to do when we flash a window is, yes, I'll use tape, but I'm also going to use a metal drip cap because that's the way they used to do it. And I'm going to use a metal cap at the bottom so that where water can get in, it can also get out. And so it's a both and, I guess, and I don't rely on a adhesive sealant that I'm going to roll onto the wall, okay? I want to use something that actually is mechanically built so that it sheds water. So that I got an overhang with a drip cap, and I've got other things that are going to help me manage water, and I'm not just going to rely on glue.
Well, like the air strip, right? Like the... What do you call that board? You were telling me about it for that ceiling that I was doing.
Oh, the air gap?
Yeah. What do you call the piece though? A piece of lattice?
Piece of lattice or slat or something. Yeah. Again, all of these problems with modernism, I think the thing that bugs me is that there's an arrogance to modern buildings and modern design and modern things that cause derision, okay, from our clients and from a lot of people, that this new glass box is a better house, a more important house, a more serious house, a real house, whereas the things that are done traditionally are, oh, that's just, you know, you're just copying the past. If you copied the past well, if you practice these traditional building methods, you will have a building that will last hundreds of years, and you're not relying on the latest fancy gadget. You know, we were talking about mold yesterday, right? Mold, black mold and the bad molds that are in houses is only a product of the last 30 or 40 years. Why is that? Oh, that's when we started using foam. Wonder what's going on. Well, when the foam came in there, they made houses so tight that the normal cycle time for an HVAC unit that was inside that house was all of a sudden it was cooling down faster. It didn't have the same air cycle time and it didn't pull all the humidity out of the air. So a lot of humidity stayed in these houses and we started developing mold. And so it wasn't until the HVAC unit people caught up to the fact that the houses were not, you know, were much tighter, that we overcame this thing and mold isn't as big a problem as it was 10 or 15 years ago. It's still a problem because we are building houses so tight they can't dry out. And so, you know, new is not better. And the last thing I'd say is that the greatness of Frank Lloyd Wright, the greatness of Mies van der Rohe, the greatness of some of these people, and you had the Farnsworth house up there, is that they studied as classicists, okay? That house right there, all those rectangles in there, those are golden rectangles, okay? So he built in a traditional, humanistic, beautiful way using traditional building methods, but applied it to a modern invention.
Well, right? I would say I actually like that. Like, that's kind of cool because it's organized. I think where I get lost is the disorganization, unless it's like Victorian, because then for some reason it's just like magical to me. But yeah, that's not bad.
So like, those guys cool. practice, and this is what I think should happen at modern architecture schools. They should study classicism for the first year or two, and the last year or two, they apply it to whatever they want to be building if they want to be new and fancy. But
I guess you're saying your problem is they're practicing to be English professors or book writers, authors. That's what they're called. But they don't know proper grammar. Is essentially what you're saying.
Yeah, they can't. They have a much more restricted vocabulary, and they can't do poetry.
Yeah, they need to learn the grammar, rules of the grammar before they can break them.
What's that old phrase that reinvent the wheel? Right? Isn't that the one?
Yeah.
Like, no, right? I think it's like don't reinvent the wheel. It's like, why would you, for the sake of being different, be different?
Well, you know? I mean, if you look at like art. And you look at you know, the R. Mutt and the urinal that thank Duchamp. You Marcel Duchamp. This is what I think architecture has become, a political statement, an ideal, okay, or a political ideal that they're trying to push onto us that's ugly. And finally, people are starting. I mean, and this has been known for a while. If you think about Thomas Wolfe's book, he came out with a book basically saying, why are we building ugly buildings? Why are these committees getting together, building and approving these ugly buildings that nobody likes? House to Bauhaus or something
like
that.
Well, this is like
Bauhaus to our house.
Like, I'm as you're showing me this urinal and like this, and like this modern architecture stuff.
Yeah.
Like, why do we even entertain the idea of these people? It's almost like when a homeless guy comes up to you on the street, you got to just be like, all right, see you, have a good day, buddy. And it's like, why, you know, like, just
there's a quote I can remember from this book is basically, never before have we been in a time where we are building buildings that nobody likes and nobody thinks is beautiful. What's going on? It's just this crazy thing. It drives me nuts. And you got me going on a long spiel about modern architecture. There are modern pieces I like, but the whole philosophy and the whole ideal of it really drives me crazy.
But because the philosophy is rebellion for the sake of rebellion, and at this point we've lost what we're rebelling from. Is that kind of part of it?
You go to architecture school, and it's this...
it's like trying to get a patent. You got to be a little bit different.
Yeah, you got to be... You know? Yeah, you can't copy
what
anybody else...
It's got to be 10% different from the other patent to get like your own. But why would you, why is there so much ego in saying, I did this? Like, I think when you build something, you're not like, look what I did. You're like, this is a cool building, and here's the reasons why. It's not about you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that our buildings are contributing to the beauty of the landscape and make people's lives better. And so because it's beautiful and because it's well-crafted, it improves the lives of the people that live there. And I just find that, like, the art world, there tends to be arrogance that goes along with that. I mean, the whole idea of Starchitect, right? These
what is that?
The Starchitects are like the Garys of the world who get these commissions to do these one-of-a-kind pieces that, I mean, the whole Balboa art museum that he did, Balboa is a backwater town. And the museum there said, we need to have a statement piece so that people will come visit. You know, he basically built that.
Bilbao.
He basically built that to be it was a statement piece that would cause people to come and visit. And so when you have that kind of statement piece that people would travel, oh, we got to go see the Bilbao, whatever. We've got to go see this museum because it's a Frank Gehry sculpture and everything else, right? It becomes a destination in and of itself. So you have having these star architects and who do these inventive, crazy things like no one could build this. How did they do this? Whatever else, it ends up being, you end up setting up architecture and architectural expectations to be something that you know is hard to live in, right? I mean,
I'm curious how many people would actually like do like man on the street and like show someone, this is the Bilbao. Do you like this? You know, like I'm curious what that would be.
You just need to do the Pepsi challenge of what do you like?
Yeah.
And so the thing that
Pepsi wins,
like when Frank Gehry designed the Eisenhower monument. Okay. It got a lot of press, but the Eisenhower monument ended up being ugly. Okay. Now it was complained against because basically he had these steel framed screens. Okay. That was interesting artistically, but ugly visually, because they had these columns that just went into the air. Eisenhower famously hated modern architecture. And you know, you end up building a monument to a guy who would have hated this. Yeah. Right. And so,
well, doesn't that just look like you're under an underpass? Like,
yeah, it's, I would finish my tirade by just saying, where does this get us? Right. If you looked in the 1920s, architects at that time were trying to, you know, they believed, and if you look at the City Beautiful movement in the early 1900s, they believed that they could change a society with beauty of architecture, okay? They felt like they could change the way people felt about things if you made something beautiful. So you had these wide boulevards, you had these beautiful things going on there. And so today, I would think that, you know, architects think, well, I don't know what they think. There was just a higher ideal back then than today. And so it's just an interesting development. And so architecture ends up today being irrelevant in my mind compared to architecture 100 years ago.
So I guess in summation, you don't like modern architecture because of what it's done to architecture as a whole, is what you're saying.
I mean, that's part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. I guess I'm looking at this, I'm just kind of like, are there any good modern architecture pieces that we should talk about? We've really been ripping on them, you know, this past modern people.
I think that's the problem.
I mean, we talked about the one, Falling Water. You and I don't like it, but you love it. Marry it. You want to take it on dates.
I mean, if you look at it, except for the Frank Gehrys and guys like that out there, right?
What do you think of cubism?
Well, cubism isn't necessarily a architectural movement. It's an art movement.
Got it.
So that's, you know, Picasso and the cubist period and things like that.
Picasso was awful too.
There's no cubist houses?
I think there's a lot of comparisons between a Picasso and modern architecture.
Yeah.
Right? That Picasso, if you look at his early stuff, he was a great portrait artist. He could actually draw the human figure very beautifully.
And he got sucked into...
Well, then that cubist period, and you know, you end up with these faces that are like, has ears next to the, you know, the mouth, and just weird things that are disorienting, right? You're not drawn to them. There's other things he's done which are completely beautiful. And so, I mean, he's so talented, but...
I guess I hadn't seen those, so...
There's things he does that, but yeah, I mean, he was uber talented.
From what I've seen from him.
I think that all three of these things, jazz, there's great jazz, and then there's jazz that's like, what in the world is that? Bunch of noise.
As you think about that, we're just kind of making these style comparisons, and it just seems like the common trend is you have to know the fundamentals before you can riff. Like, in order to play jazz, you have to know how to play the scales, and then you can play jazz. In order to play, like, you got to know the rules in order to know how you can break them creatively to create something.
Yeah, because even in classicism, there's like when we were in Boston, you're like, oh, if you look at that order, it's not perfect, but like it works because the guy who did it knew what he was doing, right. You know, with the proportions.
I think there's also the truth is that there are geniuses out there, okay? That there are people that think differently, are ahead of their time, are doing things, but that doesn't mean that we should train every student to be, you know, Frank Lloyd Wright. We should train, Frank Lloyd Wright is just a special person, right? Or, you know.
Well, because if that's the case, you're almost setting yourself up for failure in terms of putting out the best class
of
architects.
You totally are.
You're planning for the one-off case rather than planning for consistency. And
I read recently that maybe it was a rumor, that architecture licenses were no longer going to be required. I don't know if that's true.
Well, that's kind of fun.
Sign me up.
anyway, I can't remember what I was going to say. Is this where we wanted to go with this modern architecture?
Yeah,
thing?
I just didn't know if there was something positive about it. I think we're kind of saying the thesis of what Larity? What are the guy's name? What was it again?
Lutyens.
Are you trying to say Lutyens?
Lutyens. Trying to mess with me. But I think we're kind of saying the same thing that he's saying, where he's like, you know, in the classicism, there's a human feel and there's a human rhythm and your body like takes it in, your eyes take it in as like, you know, and then in the modern, it's like very machined, very.
There's an architect in Denver who was part of the Denver firm. He wrote a book called Neurology, Something in Beauty. Basically, he compared it back to the fight or flight syndrome.
Yes.
That you end up having a reaction, okay, and it shows a snake. And you're immediately kind of, you know, drawn away from it.
Experiment.
And or something that you're drawn to and that's beautiful.
Like
and
a
you're
flower.
You're drawn, yeah. And so that he said his point was a lot of architecture is that, you know, meant to be jarring, meant to be, you know, reactive and not necessarily beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy. I feel like that got it at what we were looking at.
Yeah. I mean, I think bringing it back to more of the residential world, you know, the white boxes and the, you know, the Apple store, and the big glass walls and things like that. I just think that there is a reaction to sometimes that architecture that is, oh, wow. Right. That, you know, look how big that glass is. Look at the expanse. They're terribly inefficient window, or terribly inefficient house to live in. And so it struck me as funny that while modern architects will talk about sustainability and everything else, they'll build the Apple store.
The greenhouse.
Right. Just this glass box that, you know, you can't heat efficiently. It isn't sustainable without caulk, right? It just, anyway, it's just kind of... ironic.
Is modern is what Frank Gehry did, because I see the Apple store as modern architecture, but is what Frank Gehry did, is that modern architecture? Because that seems like a whole nother category.
I've heard it called as deconstructionism, and so I think the way it works out is you have the modernists that are Mies van der Rohe, you know, Frank Lloyd Wright, you know, those guys, who's the other guy in France, anyway, Corbusier, thank you, were the early modernists. Then you get into the 50s and 60s, and then you get to postmodernism. That's Richard Meier, and that's some of the guys that talk about strip malls and talk about things like that. And then after the postmodern period, which lasts into the 80s or 90s, you end up with a kind of a deconstruction period. And so I think that's how it works. I'm not an expert on it. The ideals, you know, people often will say how cutting edge modern architecture is. We've been building white boxes and glass for 100 years, right? When Gropius built his house, which is, you know, what very compared to a lot of new houses today, white boxes, that house could have been built in the 80s, okay? Mm-hmm. And that house was built in, I think, the late 30s or 40s. And so we've been building this style of architecture for 100 years. It's no longer cutting edge. It's no longer inventive. We're just copying the past. It's just another style that we're copying or that we're trying to manage through. And so anyway.
Yeah.
Today we're doing that with shipping containers, you know?
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's hilarious. cutting those windows out instead of installing them. Well, all right. Thanks for watching this episode of the Passion for Craft podcast, and we'll see you in the next one.